Nation. You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this February 25th, 2026. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. He is Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us on a, sunny, overcast, chilly day. I don't know, however you want to describe it. It's a good Wednesday to me. Happy Wednesday to all you Auburn High Tiger fans out there. If you're an Auburn University Tiger fan, Wednesday to you. And so, Christian, happy Wednesday to you, right? I think, maybe. Happy Wednesday?
More or less, yeah.
Okay.
The high school side of things, very much happy Wednesday, yes. With,
yeah, you guys won last
night. Lee Scott baseball coming off a big-time win. But yeah, for the Auburn University standpoint, it's...
It's Wednesday, my dudes.
Not even. It is Wednesday, my dudes. It's also hump day at Auburn baseball.
It is hump day.
So,
what's her name?
Loretta.
Loretta.
Loretta the Camel going to be at Plainsman Park once again here this afternoon for Auburn and West Georgia.
I wish I could be over there. I can't today, unfortunately. But you know who is? Jacob Hillman will be there.
He will be.
It's his second favorite day at Plainsman Park.
Other than what, singles night?
It's singles night.
I think that's officially what we've... What we've decided,
I heard him confirm it. Not on the air, but
we'll get Loretta to come here one day. And
dude, could you imagine a camel in the studio? As long as you sign up to clean up after it, I don't care what we do.
Do we have to clean up today? Is that we cleaning up Auburn basketball today?
Oh gosh, yeah, I don't know. There is a lot to clean up today. But yes, happy Wednesday. Lots to go to, lots to talk about on today's show. I think it's in our contract that we have to talk about Auburn basketball today. So we will. We'll talk about
it. Was reconstructed this morning.
Yeah, we found a new agreement on our desk, and it just happened to have our signature already on it. Crazy how that worked. So we will talk about Auburn basketball and whatever the heck that was last night in Norman, Oklahoma, where Auburn fans seem to be checked out. This team might seem to be checked out, and Stephen Pearl might be checked out as well. So we'll talk about that. Plus, we'll get our guy Jordan Hill of Dogs 247. He'll join us on the phone lines at 2:30. We'll get the latest updates on the Georgia Bulldogs. Talk about a team that's fighting for their tournament lives and fighting for pretty much anything they can get their hands on. We'll talk to him about that coming up at 2:30. Our guy Daryl Daprich of Locked On Auburn in the Barn will join us at 3:05. No way he has a Dap rant loaded up and ready to go for when we kick off the second hour. And then some football things for Auburn where opposing teams and coaches might be throwing a little shade at Auburn for one of the players that left to go to Austin. We'll talk about that coming up in hour number two. But yeah, I went to Montgomery this morning. Second game in a row, second in 5 days that I've got to call in Montgomery with a 9 a.m. start. And now I have another one on the docket because, man, the Auburn High varsity girls basketball team went to the Acadome this morning. They took on Central Phoenix City for the fourth time this year. You should never have to play your rival four times in the same season.
But history did not repeat itself.
No, it did not. Thank the Lord for that. Auburn is victorious 62-60. The Lady Tigers get it done over the Lady Red Devils this morning in the Elite Eight. and we're heading to Birmingham. We're heading to the Final Four to take on Bob Jones next Thursday morning at the BJCC. Very excited.
The final two or three minutes felt as if neither team really wanted to
go. Yeah,
but,
a little bit.
One mistake more than the others and enough capitalizations on more free throw
attempts. Dude, one of the more back and forth games I've seen in quite some time. And we say that and hear that all the time in sports, but nobody, I believe the largest lead was 5 in this game either way for Auburn. 5 points for Auburn, 4 for Central. That was the largest lead either team had all day.
Man.
So, a lot of fun down in Montgomery. Appreciate people who tuned in this morning. And yes, we are heading to the Final Four. The Auburn High Tigers will be there for the 5th time in program history. They are back there after getting there in 2024, falling short a year ago. So, had a lot of fun with that. Again, you mentioned it. You were on the air last night for Lee Scott Baseball. We had Auburn High Softball on the air last night as well. They had a great performance. I believe they had a shutout and possibly a perfect game. I can't remember. No hitter last night for Auburn High Softball. So there you go. Our buddy Jack Cutton had the call with that. You had baseball for Lee Scott.
Yeah,
so
not too bad at all around the high school networks. I mean,
yeah,
you don't really think about it, and I'm guessing that Jack didn't either. You don't think about hopping on the broadcast and think about, okay, what is my no-hitter going to go?
Yeah.
What is my no-hitter call going to be the very first game of the year? Same, honestly, for me, is you don't necessarily hop on the mic expecting, okay, how was that first two-run double going to sound? Or how was that in 42-degree temperatures? How was that bottom of the sixth home run going to sound? You don't really think about it until it actually happens. Excited to shake off the rust, definitely, on the baseball side of things, where I'm excited to get back there Friday to just to call it again, to get more and more comfortable. I was nervous for that game, which is so wild to me, considering
you play again
the
this
fact
Friday?
That we play Friday and a doubleheader Saturday.
So do we.
We are quickly back in action, but I'm excited to get back behind the microphone just because of it being almost a year from calling baseball, and I could feel it a little bit. So hoping that that's nervous excitement just turns to pure enjoyment, and I know that it will the further we get along down baseball season.
Yeah, so a lot of stuff going on in our high school coverage. Again, download the Radio Alabama app. You can keep up with everything we've got going on for Auburn High, Lee Scott, and beyond. But phone lines are open today. They're open. I can't believe somebody didn't call before we went on. That happens sometimes on days like today.
Maybe that shows.
Maybe that does show. Maybe it does. Phone lines are open, 334-321-1390. Again, 334-321-1390. Phone lines are open if you would like to discuss what happened in Norman last night. If you would like to give us your thoughts on how you feel about this Auburn basketball team that goes on the road and loses to Oklahoma 91-79. This was bad. This was very bad. This was very, very bad for Auburn. This was a game that we talked about it yesterday was scary from Auburn's defensive viewpoint. Offense has not been the issue. We weren't really worried about that. And there were a couple of players for this Oklahoma team that we highlighted yesterday. They come in to get you. A couple of other guys play good as well. And Christian, you give up 91 points in an SEC game, I don't care where you're playing it, you're not going to win.
You give up 91 points to what we discussed yesterday is one of the slowest teams in college basketball. That's what's concerning. That is what is the glaring emphasis on when you look at this game of, okay, I don't need to look at box scores. I don't need to look at anything else. Oklahoma scored 91 points against Auburn. You then do dive into some of these stats, and what was it? Oklahoma was 10 of 14 from three. At halftime, they finished 13 of 19. We told you, Nigel Pack is going to be the guy that you had to stop. He only shot the ball 13 times. Just happened to make 8 of them.
Yeah.
With 6 of them from behind the arc. Muhammad Wagee dominated down low. Keyshawn Hall, Keyshawn Murphy, and Filip Jovic got in foul trouble early in the first half. And you really wondered how much that would be a factor in the second half. It ultimately was. Again, Wagee finishes with 18, 10 of those coming from the free throw line. Had 9 rebounds, 4 steals, 4 blocks. Did everything in the interior for this Oklahoma team, a team that shot 53%, 30 of 57, and again, 13 of 19 from deep. Not really much that you can say other than a couple of the quotes that Stephen Pearl had, which we'll get to here in just a moment, but you feel like that pretty much sums up this game to a T for the Auburn Tigers.
This is such a disappointing performance. Like, and that has so much energy of growing up, right? It's, I'm not mad, I'm just disappointed, but I guess I finally understand what my parents meant all those years, because you're not mad at Auburn. Nobody's mad. You're disappointed because you're tired. You're disappointed because you're exhausted.
Yeah,
you don't have the energy to be mad
that's
about this.
Yeah, you don't have the energy to openly raise your voice and think about the repercussions other than just what you're seeing on paper now.
Yeah, it's when your wild child kid falls off the dirt mound and breaks his arm. It's like, well, you knew it was coming. This isn't surprising. It sucks. You're upset about it, and you got to fix it. But you're not overly surprised when he comes walking through the door crying and with his bones sticking out, right? That's
did you do a bunch of dirt hill climbing?
As a kid? Oh, yeah. Are you kidding me? New housing developments in the neighborhood before they were completely built? Absolutely. But I can say, in my 26 years of life, I have never... I've said it several times. I'm good,
okay,
dude.
Okay.
I'm indestructible, bro.
There's no JG Broadcasters jinx with life only.
I guess we're going to find out. I have never broken a bone in my 26 years of life.
Oh, man.
And I played, you know, I played sports and did everything growing up. Dude, I climbed trees growing up. I've fallen out of trees several times. Like, explains a lot. But, no, I've never broken a bone in my life, actually.
For those that don't know, Jacob is, we all hear about the Broadcasters jinx. There is nobody worse in the entire world than Jacob Goins when it comes to in-game broadcaster.
Happened this morning, actually.
I was going to say, you're at the point of where you can't give a personal opinion. You just have to...
Yeah. I talked about Braylee Winfrey, our senior guard for Auburn High. 70% free throw shooter. Best on the team. Clank. Yeah.
Yeah.
Can't
right
make it up.
It's pretty impressive.
Yeah. I went silent and she made the second one. So, but this Auburn basketball team is that child. It's the troubled child that's always, you know, swinging upside down and doing crazy things that they're not supposed to be doing, and then they get hurt. And it's like, yep, there it is. This result last night was not surprising. It was not surprising at all. Disappointing? Yes. Frustrating? Yes. Season ending? Maybe. But you wouldn't know it with how Auburn played. You wouldn't know it with the energy that Auburn showed up with. And we're going to talk those quotes from Stephen Pearl in just a minute. But man, this was a sad performance for an Auburn basketball team that has just completely crumbled down the stretch. You've now lost 6 of your last 7 games. And the season seems
was that a
to
smirk?
Just be... No. It took everything in me not to do it. 6 of your last 7 games, with 3 games to go, 2 of them on your home floor against terrible teams, and then a road game at Alabama. This was one that we talked about you couldn't afford to lose. Even with it being a quad one game, you couldn't afford to lose it to that Oklahoma team. And it's not the idea that you lost, it's the way that you did it. And this Auburn team, I think they're done, man. I think they're done. I think they found a way somehow to muster up the energy to get lucky and beat Kentucky down the stretch, have a few things go their way for the first time in a long time, and ultimately come out with that win. But since that Tennessee game, man, this team has just they've given in. They've blown up. They've crumbled. They've just completely crumbled. And last night may be the last straw for this team for them to try and fix it.
Stephen Pearl says, quote, "I want to apologize to our fans for that poor performance tonight. We were entitled tonight. We were selfish tonight on the defensive end. We had no urgency, and that's unacceptable." Kind of sums everything up right there. I mean, the fact that you get the emotional win the way that you did against Kentucky at home, to where you then go on the road, one more time before you come back home for two games that you are going to be heavily favored in. And with this being one of those games where your season is on the line, it felt like there was just an emotional hangover, which is something that you don't usually see happen with teams on the brink of losing their season or losing the postseason. But it was almost as if they did everything they could. You mentioned it, just enough effort to come away with a win over Kentucky and just had a pure lapse, especially again on the defensive end in Norman. When you're there for, what, the first time ever, right, I believe? If not one of the very few times. I know Auburn posted uncharted territory.
Yeah. In a building that was...
in a building where Auburn fans may have outnumbered Oklahoma fans.
I mean, the turnout was sorry for that game. And yet Oklahoma wins. They win 91-79. They didn't just beat you. You didn't get beat on a buzzer beater. You got it handed to you for 40 minutes, bro. You got outplayed, out-hustled. I'm not going to say you got out-coached. Coaching had nothing to do with this game.
No.
This was not coaching. This was guys on the floor who simply didn't want to be there. And I wish that there was a world where Steven and the coaching staff could look at his guys before they hopped on that jet to Norman and just say, just don't bother. Just stay here.
Yeah.
Just stay. We'll take the guys that want to go because I don't know what those guys are. I don't know who those guys are. I have an idea based off the eye test alone, right? And we probably won't go into that detail on air, but this was a sorry performance for Auburn last night in Norman.
This is one of those games, maybe this is the game, where we get over the luck factor or the unlucky of, man, it seems like everybody just has a career high when they play against Auburn. When it happens 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 times, maybe it's a little bit more than just unlucky.
And back-to-back-to-back-to-back games. Right.
Oh, it's crazy. Just when Auburn does what they do. And we had conversations about that on Monday, even yesterday, based off of things finally going Auburn's way against Kentucky. But then you immediately see it bounce back to what it was. It's a little bit more than just, shucky darns, we'll try it again next time.
All right, let's get to our first break here in hour number one. Specter, I see you over there, my friend. We're going to start the second segment with you. Want you to have plenty of time to say what you want to say. Other people can call in and give us your thoughts as well. 334-321-1390. The text box is open as well at 784-1067. We get to the phone lines right after this as we're just underway here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line.
This is Amber from Amber and Ian. You're listening to On the Line with Jacob Goins on Auburn Opelika Sports Leader ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
All right, let's get to the phone lines here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line, 334-321-1390. What's up, Specter? How do you feel about this game last night, my friend?
Well, let me tell you, I think we talked yesterday. I'm not sure, but we were talking about it seems like everybody has their A game when they play Auburn. But last night's game, you can't say that because Auburn played like a team that didn't have anything to lose. And they get this false indication that that they're in the tournament no matter what because of all the quad one games they've played. I don't know how that's going to play out if we lose the next four games. But last night's game, we don't need to be in no tournament. I tell you that. If we play like that in our first game of the tournament, we're going to get blowed out.
Looking at Joe Lunardi right now, this was following an interview, I believe, from this morning, talking about he has Auburn as the 41st team on his seed list, which would make them a play-in team right now.
Oh, Lord.
meaning they would go and play that game in Dayton on the Wednesday or on that Tuesday or Wednesday.
Just to make the 64-team tournament.
Well, I tell you what, you don't want to get yourself in a position where you're playing Duke as your first game.
Yeah. I mean, in Auburn's case, I guess they would end up being, I don't know, they could, they'll get matched up with somebody like that, and I don't know, man. There's a lot of good teams there at the top specter. But to your point also about teams, you know, playing their best and getting up to play Auburn, right? Here's a stat that someone texted us that I want you to react to. Someone texted us during the break and said that five Oklahoma players shot three-pointers last night. Here were those numbers. 2 for 2, 6 for 8, 2 for 4, 3 for 4, 0 for 1. This texter says, that's not one player getting hot. That's not lucky. That's just good. That's bad defense from Auburn.
That's absolutely right. That's bad defense. I don't understand it at all coming from a coach that's a defensive coordinator last year. It doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, we got – Pearl is not the only coach on that bench. I don't understand what the other coaches are doing. Take it up the slack. Why don't you help out your head coach and do a little bench coaching?
It's frustrating. It is. It's frustrating to watch. And imagine for us watching it, right? Imagine how frustrating it is for Steven and that coaching staff to watch it, who feel like they can't do anything, right? They feel like they – here's the way that I describe it, Spectre. You can lead a horse to water, but what?
You can't make them drink, buddy.
That's exactly right. And I think that's where Auburn's at defensively. I think that's where this coaching staff is with Auburn as a defensive team. You can scream all you want about them to play defense, and that's where it all starts. But Stephen Pearl can't go out there and play defense himself. You know what I'm saying?
I do. I do. I think I'm not in that camp of getting rid of Stephen Pearl. He's too good of a. He's already proven that he's a good defensive coach. I don't know what's going on this year. It's like you said, you can't lead. You can lead them to war, but you can't make them drink. But you know, Jimmy Raines and all and company need to open up their purses and give Steven a chance to get his own team in there. And Steven needs to tell his dad, "Hey, thanks, Dad, for this team you give me."
Yeah, I hear you on that, Spectre. We appreciate it, my friend. Always good to hear from Spectre here on the show. 334-321-1390. Phone lines open for another minute or two. Again, we've got Jordan Hill coming up at 3:30, so we'll switch gears and talk Georgia for a little bit. But that's where a lot of people are, Christian, ourselves included, is how can this Auburn team, individually and as a unit, be so bad defensively, and not even bad, just uninterested. Just don't care about playing defense.
That's exactly what you asked me yesterday. You asked what the keys to Auburn winning, and it was simply want to. There was not an ounce. Yeah, there was not a lick of want to in that contest other than, yeah, I want to go and score. I want to shoot the ball. Mm-hmm. But none of the other, none of the 50-50s, none of the dirty work, none of the rebounding down low that you feel like Auburn needs to win, and funny enough, Auburn wins the rebounding category, but it's because Oklahoma didn't miss, so they didn't have to really rebound the basketball too much. They had 28 rebounds. Auburn had 35. I mean, I'll say Phillip wanted to be there. 7 points, 8 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 steals.
Yeah.
4 offensive rebounds. But unfortunately, when you're playing 7 guys, you can't have one guy, at least defensively, that enjoys going out and getting stops.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Auburn's prided themselves on feeding off of energy from the defensive end onto the offensive side of the floor and making it to where we actually enjoy. We have more enjoyment making you not score than we do scoring the basketball. It could not be more flipped with this team.
Well, funny you say that. Our buddy Jack Hutton texted me. He actually called me and then realized we were on the air. So he texted me.
Hey, buddy.
He said he didn't know if I'd be on the air because of basketball today. But he brings up a really good point, and it's funny that you went the direction you just went because that's what Jack talks about. He says that he thinks that Steven needs to pivot to a defense-first mentality, kind of like what Tennessee has become.
Yeah.
That's the kind of team he thrives with, and I think guys who want to play defense are generally less selfish or all about their ego. So that's what our buddy Jack Cutton is saying. Maybe go to a defensive-minded team, be a Tennessee type of program where, yeah, you don't get a stop, you don't get a bucket, you don't play defense, you don't play. And I think he has tried to set that precedence, Christian. There's a reason Cade Magwell doesn't touch the floor in a month. But you can't do that with Keyshawn Hall. He tried, and it barely worked, right? I totally agree with this statement that Steven needs to make this a defensive team. And I bet he's going to try, but this isn't his team.
No, this is not his team because look at just the identity or the lack thereof defensively. Look at what happened with guys in the portal, right? Look at last year's team versus this year's team. Right, you think about guys like Chaney Johnson or Denver Jones, and yes, you got a lot of them offensively as well, but you know how much pride Denver took in locking up the other point guard, not giving up open shots, walling up when he needs to, or Chaney Johnson down low, the most physical player on the floor that took pride in what he did defensively? Sure, the offensive game took a little bit more time, but you can work on that. You can't develop a want-to into guys wanting to get stops,
yep,
wanting to win your one-on-one individual matchups, wanting to rebound, diving on the floor. You can't teach things like that. You can teach an offensive game, but without defense, you don't really have a chance in the SEC.
The list that he provided: Bryce Brown, Denver Jones, Isaac Okoro, McLemore, Cardwell, Kessler. Good offensive players when they want to, but guys that get down and get after it. Those are the ones he thinks Steven will thrive with. You're in that same boat, and I think I agree too. We'll talk more about this as we go, but we'll take a sidestep to Athens and talk to Jordan Hill of Dogs 247. What's going on with the Dogs? We talk to him next.
You're 30 minutes into On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Now back to the studio with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
30 minutes into the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. Got Christian Griffin as well. We're getting our man Jordan Hill on the phone lines here in just a moment. We're going to talk Georgia basketball, Georgia football, anything else going on here with Georgia athletics as well. And again, believe we have Jordan. Let's see if we can get him now. Jordan, do we have you, my friend, over there?
Oh, yeah, we are good to go.
Okay, well, man, we appreciate you, and appreciate you hopping on. And look, there's a ton going on, and you're giving us a chance to step outside of Auburn for just a moment because we got people outside the radio station trying to burn the place down talking Auburn basketball. So it gives us a chance to figure out what's going on over in Athens. And, man, there's been a lot going on for this Georgia team. They're in Nashville tonight. They are taking on Vanderbilt this evening for a team in Georgia, 19-8 on the season, 7-7 in SEC play. Recap what's been going on the last couple of weeks, because two-game win streak, here come the Dogs.
Yeah, and they needed those two wins desperately, Jacob. They were in a tough spot. They had lost 5 of 6 before last week and kind of felt like they were trending in their own direction when you talk about the NCAA tournament. And kudos to Mike White and his players. They bounced back, really started on Tuesday. They won at Kentucky, 86-78. That was only the fifth time that Georgia has ever won in Rupp Arena, and the first time since 2009. Now, Dennis Felton was the Georgia coach then, and that was like 3 coaches ago now, so it had been a minute. Really good performance. Georgia got Jeremiah Wilkinson back for that game, and he was clutch off the bench, 19 points. He and Smurf Millender played really well. Santo Cyril, one-time Kentucky signee, who wound up opening his recruitment back up when John Calipari went to Arkansas. He was huge in that game, had a key putback with about under a minute left in that game, and Georgia winds up winning that one. And I think, honestly, just as important was what they did on Saturday. They came back home, came back to Stegman Coliseum, and they beat Texas in a really impressive 91-80 win. A game that Georgia controlled for the most part. Texas made a run with probably about 8 minutes left in the game, and Georgia had a few different guys step up in the final minutes, including a few that you don't necessarily count on to contribute with the game on the line. Justin Abson with back-to-back buckets. Cannon Catchings with some clutch shooting, and then also Blue Kane, who this team really relies on and counts on in some big moments. So I think that was really well timed for Georgia. You mentioned it, you know, right now looking at their record, 19-8 overall, 7-7 in the SEC. I really thought over these last few weeks, if they could get to 9 conference wins, they should feel good about their chances of making the NCAA tournament. And they put themselves in a really good spot. They're 7-7. I really think 2 more wins is what you need. Now, it's not going to be easy with the 4 games they got left, but, man, what a difference a week makes. It seemed like Georgia was trending in the wrong direction, but 2 big wins really has Georgia feeling good and seeing if they can carry it forward.
You mentioned a guy like Blue Kane, and that was somebody that I wanted to specifically ask a question on, because you feel like this Georgia team, you mentioned it, relies on him, and they'll go as far as he wants to take them, has really, really struggled from 3 so far this season in SEC play. But you feel like as of late, things are kind of working its way back to normal. He had 20 against Oklahoma, 20 in the win against Kentucky, including 3 threes, had 12 points against Texas, also 4 rebounds, 5 assists. Talk about what you've seen from Blue Kane as of late, or maybe even a couple of steps back in SEC play when the 3-pointer wasn't falling, how he was still able to contribute.
I think that he had to kind of settle himself down when he was not shooting the ball well, and I do think, you know, that was a little bit of a struggle for an older guy, one of the veterans on this team, and I think he's done a better job in recent games of kind of letting it come to him, you know, not forcing the shot, because I think it's very easy if you're a shooter who is capable of hitting those 3-point shots that, you know, kind of gets in your head and you might press, you might take shots that normally you wouldn't take and really try to force the issue. I think he's done a better job of that. And I would point to, you know, his game against Texas. I had him at the end of every game. I kind of rank who I think were the top 5 players for Georgia in that specific game. And I think he was higher on my list than a lot of people who watched that game might have done otherwise, because I thought he did a great job of facilitating with the game on the line. You know, he wasn't the leading scorer. I think he had around 12 or 13 points against Texas. But when that game got tight in those final probably 8-9 minutes, he was getting the ball to Cannon Catchings, which led to a big basket. He was forcing turnovers. I think, you know, as much as Blue is capable of being that 18, 19, 20-point scorer, I think he's, you know, really more important in being able to facilitate, being able to play really good defense and force turnovers and rebound. You look at a lot of the box scores and kind of go, well, you know, Blue Kane had 7 rebounds in this game. You know, you kind of take for granted what he can do there. So he's one of those guys I kind of see as a glue guy because he does a lot of different things. He did struggle shooting from 3 earlier in SEC play, and that kind of went longer than I think a lot of us anticipated. But I think he's kind of settled back in. I think you're starting to see him be a little bit more of a low-volume shooter from 3, but he's fully capable. And I think right now he's playing really well, and I don't think it's a coincidence that Georgia is playing well around him.
We got our guy Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 with us here on ESPN 106.7. And who would have thought, Jordan, that on February 25th of this season, we would have the conversation of Georgia being above Auburn in SEC standings, a better overall record and a better SEC record. I mean, I don't think anybody would have predicted where these two teams have been, at least Georgia being above Auburn at this point in the season.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think, too, I was sitting here before I popped on with you guys just thinking back to that SEC opener in Athens and just think about, you know, how much more runway would that have given Auburn? I think they would still be upset with what's happened in recent weeks. But, you know, that would have been a quad one win for Auburn, having beaten Georgia in Athens. And, you know, I think it's fair to say is a big caveat to Todd Pettiford, who had played really well. He had fouled out before they got to overtime. But, yeah, I mean, it's one of those things that it's a very simple thing to say, but we go into a football season or a basketball season, and I try to kind of look through all of Georgia's games and at least, you know, some of the other SEC teams and get a sense for, like, all right, this is what I think their record could be this year. And the thing I've learned over the years is somebody has to lose these games. The conference is just so competitive, and it's been a rough run, I know, for Auburn, but I do think they're fully capable of riding the ship. It's just a matter of doing it.
Georgia, but now on the road, taking on the 25th ranked team in the country, the Vanderbilt Commodores, here tonight. Jordan, if Georgia wants to come out with a three-game win streak, what needs to happen for the Dogs on the road?
I think they got to take advantage of the of their size. You know, Georgia, for the most part, has not had the size advantage in a lot of games. They play a lot of guard-heavy lineups, but Vanderbilt's a team that when it has struggled, it's because the opposing bigs have really taken advantage, which is why I look at Santos Cyril. Let's see how he plays. I think he's played really well in the last couple of games for Georgia, and he's a guy that was battling illness, was dealing with an ankle injury a few weeks ago that he, you could just tell he was not himself. But he's played really well, so pay attention to what he does there. And, you know, kind of goes back to talking about Blue Kane and really the guards on this team. They shot the ball really well from three in recent games, particularly in the first half of those games against Kentucky and Texas. Vanderbilt is very good on defense, excuse me, and is very good in terms of defending the three. So I think if you're Georgia, you need to get Smurf Millender, you need to get Jeremiah Wilkinson some looks from deep. What we've seen in the last week especially is they've gotten hot from deep early, and it's kind of built a confidence among the Georgia shooters, and it's kind of put the opponent on their toes. And I don't think it's a secret that they know this is a very tough matchup playing top 25 ranked Vanderbilt team in Nashville. But if you come out shooting hot and maybe try to take advantage of what few mistakes Vanderbilt makes on defense, you might put yourself right there in the fight. You might put yourself in a game that you win this one. Right now, four games left in the regular season for Georgia, and this is only one of two quad one games. This would be huge if Georgia was able to find a way further boost your resume. And, you know, maybe if you play your cards right with how you end the regular season, you might bump up a seed line or two before it's all said and done.
Well, that's what I wanted to dive into a little bit more. Again, Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 with us on the phone lines here on ESPN 106.7. Georgia 33rd in the net rankings right now, 4-6 in quad one, 6-1 in quad two. But what's really holding Georgia back, they've got a quad three loss on the schedule right now. Is that the Ole Miss loss, Jordan, looking at the schedule? Would that be the loss against the Rebels at home back in early SEC play?
Yeah, that's absolutely what the quad three loss is. And it's still one of those games, even like going to the press conference afterwards, you kind of struggled to wrap your head around what just happened. And Mike White said it best when we talked to him afterwards. He said, you hit 15 three-pointers at home and you lose. He said, I don't know that I've ever been a part of that. And yeah, it was one of those games where, you know, when you wanted me to look at Georgia and say, what have they been at their worst? It was a game like Ole Miss, where there are times there's just like a disconnect on defense. There's just not the getting back in time on the other end of the floor, not wanting to defend, giving those guys easy lanes to the basket. And I don't know that I'll ever forget. Ole Miss had one layup where guy just went absolutely uncontested from about half court, and Mike White immediately called timeout, and you could just tell how frustrated he was. So, yeah, that is the quad three loss, and it's one that definitely the ugliest loss Georgia had. Again, they shot the ball really well, 15 three-pointers, but just could not get stops on the other end.
Yeah, that was the overtime loss in Athens. I remember we were watching that, Christian, that game, that Ole Miss-Georgia game, yeah. So I forgot about that one. And so, Jordan, my secondary to that is you came on with us today and talked about Georgia needing to win two more games. Does it matter which two? Does it have to be a game like tonight on the road against Vanderbilt? Does it have to be that game against Alabama in Athens, or can it be any combination of those two plus South Carolina and Mississippi State in your mind?
Yeah, I don't know that they necessarily have to have another marquee win. You know, mentioning that the Vanderbilt game tonight is a quad one game, that Alabama game that is in Athens, it is a quad one game too. I think the fact that they won in Lexington kind of means that they don't need like a marquee win still left on the slate. But you know, I think it's fair to say that to get to nine wins, which would be two more wins in the regular season, it's no gimme. I mean, at Vanderbilt, I would say that, you know, Georgia, I think Georgia's about a 9.5-point underdog going into this game. You got South Carolina at home, which you should take care of business, but South Carolina did just beat Mississippi State, and they gave Kentucky a run for their money on Tuesday night. Alabama at home, certainly not going to be easy. And then at Mississippi State, if I'm remembering correctly, Georgia has not won in Starkville since 2016. So it's not going to be easy. And I still think know, if they only get one more win, I think there's still a decent chance that they still make the NCAA tournament. But I think nine is where you can kind of breathe a sigh of relief and say, we are going to the SEC, or I'm sorry, going to the NCAA tournament. Which, me saying that, I will say this too, and I'll shout out my buddy Nathan King over at Auburn Undercover. You know, I think we all understand you do not want to go into the SEC tournament and say, well, we really need three wins or we really need to do this. You know, I think I've talked about it on the show before, guys, is that you just can't bank on what you do in the SEC tournament catching the attention of the committee, because we've seen it in the past where that doesn't really matter so much. They've already kind of made up their minds on who they think should be in and what their seat should be.
Which is unfortunate, but it is true. They have all but said that that's the case, and they, especially with the SEC playing its championship game on Sunday, on Selection Sunday, yeah, they don't, unless you win it and don't give them a choice but to put you in because of the automatic bid, they just don't care what happens in conference tournaments. Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 with us every single Wednesday. Anything on the football side that we need to know about? I know spring practice will be kicking up here in just a couple of weeks, but anything on the football side we need to know?
Not too much. Spring practice will start on March 17th, and they'll have G-Day on April 18th. So it won't be that much longer until we are talking about spring football. You know, it's crazy how quickly the offseason moves along. And only other thing I would say, 10 former Bulldogs are headed to the NFL Combine. They're up in Indianapolis right now. Those workouts will start tomorrow. You'll have some of those guys in action, and some guys that I think have a chance to be first-round picks. I'd look at Monroe Freeling, the left tackle for Georgia. I think he could have a really big combine. C.J. Allen, he's probably going to be the first Bulldog off the board, the linebacker. And you know, you'll have some other guys in the mix. Zachariah Branch, the slot receiver, I could see him testing really well. A lot of people see him as a top 50 prospect in this draft, and got several other guys as well. So busy time of year, kind of balancing, you know, NFL stuff with the draft, following this college basketball team to the SEC tournament and whatever follows after that. And again, countdown is definitely on to spring practice and the Bulldogs being back on the practice field.
My man, plug it all. Tell people how they can find all your work for all those things going on. And I know Georgia baseball in action right now against Troy, I believe.
Yeah, they're off to a good start there. But yeah, dogs247.com, on Twitter at Jordan Davis Hill, on Twitter at dogs247. Go sign up, 50% off right now. And I know our buddies over at Auburn Undercover, they have the same sale going on. I was reading some of the basketball coverage from Nathan King and those guys as well. So Junkyard Dogcast podcast, got a lot of good stuff there. And yeah, like I said, super busy time of year with the basketball winding down, football going to get ready for spring ball here soon, but gives us a ton to talk about, and appreciate you guys having me back on and catching up on everything going on over here in Athens.
Yeah, always appreciate your time, my friend. Great information, great insight on what's happening with Georgia athletics. We'll do it again next Wednesday, okay?
Sounds great, guys.
Jordan Hill, Dogs247. Again, check it out, dogs247.com. He covers the Dogs better than anybody, including tonight. Big game for Georgia basketball on the road against Vandy. Big games tonight, big games last night, too. We'll talk about those and wrap up hour number one right after this.
This is Coach Larry Vickers, and you're on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin on Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin, online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
All right, wrap it up. Hour number one here on ESPN 106.7. Got a couple of minutes before we take our top of the hour break. We're then Daryl Dapperich will be joining us at 3:05. Double D Wednesday is here of Locked On Auburn in the Barn. We'll talk to him, and we're just going to turn on the phones and let him go, man. That's what's going to happen there. But thanks to Jordan Hill of Dogs 247. Speaking of the phones, he just got off the phone with us. And a lot of good things going on over in Athens. And yes, big games tonight, but big games last night, too, in the SEC and in college basketball, where it continues to be an unpredictable sport. I mean, the ACC is just awesome, man. I love that conference so much. I respect them. I love them. I think they should get all of their teams into the NCAA tournament, including Notre Dame, who was so close to beating Duke last night. They were right there.
They were. I mean,
they were right there. If they only had a few more points.
If they only scored 45 more, they would have won.
They would have won the game.
Golly.
They lost 100-56 to Duke.
Yikes.
Yikes. Arizona. Oh, I was going to say Arizona had to survive last night against Baylor
they
on
did.
The road.
Yeah, Jaden Bradley played really well. Michigan.
Survived.
Just kind of lulled their way through. I feel like Michigan's kind of comparable to Auburn last year. They just kind of know that they're really, really good, and
yeah,
they can take 3 to 4 minutes off, and although it's not advised, they can still do that and know that they're good enough to still pull away with wins. Iowa State dominates Utah. A game that we talked a little bit about, Virginia and NC State. My goodness. Virginia struggled with Miami. Can't say that they struggled with Will Wade and NC State.
When's the last time Virginia scored 90 points in a conference game?
Didn't we talk about this was it the last time they scored 100?
Was this the last time we talked about this? I can't remember. Yeah, I think it was, and it ended up being some weird non-conference game way back when, but 90 points for Virginia, who, again, has a new coach. This is not Virginia of old. This is a new Virginia team right now.
If it helps, it was 2 games ago. Against Georgia Tech. They beat them 94-68.
Oh, okay. Well,
they also beat Notre Dame 100-97 this year.
Well, clearly that says more about Notre Dame.
And 95 against Virginia Tech and 95 against American.
This is a new Virginia team,
man. And 94 against Queens and 104 against Marshall and 91 against Hampton, okay?
I said in ACC play.
Stop hating.
I do. I am a hater. I am a hater big time. So Virginia will be a top 10 team, I think, come the newest AP poll. Texas Tech gets back on track against Cincinnati. UCF blasts BYU on the road in Provo last night.
The first half of this game was absolutely bizarre. It was 52-28 at halftime. BYU scores 56 points in the second half and still loses by 13 at home. We talk about it. UCF and Arizona State are two of the weirdest teams that you will play or see all year long, which goes to show you why when it was an Auburn UCF 8-9 seed, it was please no. Please no. That's exactly why.
Tennessee, we talked about this game too. Tennessee goes on the road, loses to Missouri and Como last night, 73-69. Missouri, they're a team you don't want to play, man. They're feisty. They're a scrappy team, man.
It's one of those teams that you can have anybody go off any given night. Last night it was T.O. Barrett, had 28 on 12 of 17. Gillespie was 8 of 21 from the floor. He had 19, but if that's what leads the way for Tennessee, that's why a team like Tennessee scares you when you get to the big dance.
23rd ranked St. Louis. They made that trip to Dayton, Ohio, baby. They couldn't get it done. Go, go, Dayton Flyers, 77-62. Dayton, are they going to be in the tournament? Probably not, but they beat St. Louis last night, so that's all that matters.
More importantly than anything, Miami of Ohio stays undefeated.
Heck yeah, they did. Miami, baby. I don't have the emotional ties to them like I do Dayton, but, you know, Ohio, I'll claim it.
Go, Red
Hawks. big games tonight. We'll talk about those as we go. Hour number one's in the book. Stick around. Daryl Dappertz joins us to start hour number two.
The following is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what Sports Talk Radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. It is the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. He is the Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us on this Wednesday afternoon. And if you missed any of the first hour of today's show, we talked a lot of basketball as Auburn falls to Oklahoma last night in Norman. We talked about that and gave our thoughts on that. And where Auburn can go from here. It was tough to watch that one last night. So gave a lot of thoughts on that. Plus, we talked to Jordan Hill of Dogs 247. Got some updates from Athens on Georgia basketball, who, believe it or not, is in a better position than Auburn is right now. They are in the tournament. They've got the resume to do so, and they feel pretty good about what they've been up to as of late. So talk to him about that, the latest football news for Georgia as well. All of that in hour number one here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line.
Here in hour number two, we're getting our guy Double D, Daryl Daprich of Locked On Auburn and the Barn here with us on the phone lines. We're just going to stop talking. We're going to let him give his Auburn rant that we know that he has somewhere in there. It may have been tucked deep down, maybe not as much so anymore. We'll talk Auburn basketball. We'll also have a nice little Auburn baseball conversation in there. Maybe some football news on some of the quotes and some of the thoughts on other SEC coaches, maybe taking a little bit of a jab towards the Auburn Tigers. We'll talk about that with Daryl here coming up here in just a few moments. But my goodness, looking at, again, some of the games last night, some of the more games tonight that you just have in college basketball. And, I mean, St. John's and UConn.
Huge.
To start the night at 6 o'clock, you have Florida on the road at Texas, Maryland, and Nebraska, where Nebraska is a 17.5-point favorite against Maryland, who is now 4-12. In Big Ten play, and so credit to Buzz Williams on that side of things. And most importantly, Gonzaga, a 26.5-point favorite at home against Portland.
Oh, man, I need my Pilots to pull this off tonight. My Portland Pilots, the team, their logo is sweet, but
whoever's playing Gonzaga is just your claimed team of the day.
Other than Penn State, man, I just love teams that play Gonzaga. That's all I have in the tank. So I think we got our guy ready to go. Daryl Daprich, Double D for Double D Wednesdays of Locked On Auburn and the Barn. My man, it is good to hear from you, and I hope all is well.
Yes, sir. The Portland Pirates. Oh, that's pretty sweet. I like that.
They
used to have a minor league hockey team that was the Portland Pirates, too.
Well, this one's the Pilots. I'm sorry. My enunciation was not good. Pilots.
My bad. Yeah, the Portland Pirates were minor league, and then the Portland Pilots. Do you know where the Portland, University of Portland Pilots got the origin of their name or why they came up with that name?
No, I don't.
Do you know that Seattle had a Major League Baseball franchise before the Mariners, and they were called the Seattle Pilots?
Way back when, right? I mean, I feel like I remember seeing the logo, but
Sweet logo.
Okay.
Yeah, sweet. So Pacific Northwest, they kind of, yeah, that's where they got that from.
Interesting.
So there you go.
How about that?
Useless knowledge that Daryl Daffer.
No, it's never useless, my friend. And hey, want to let you know that we have a longtime listener of our show who is not local, who's in another state typically, but today, for whatever reason, he is listening from Wyoming, and says he always gets pumped up when Daryl comes on. Double D is a big fan of you, big fan of you being on our show. So we have somebody streaming on our app in Wyoming right now for you, my friend. So that should make you feel pretty good.
Well, I would like to say hello to him, and thank you for listening, and I appreciate it. Have a great day out there in the Big Sky Country.
Well, let's talk. Let's get into it. We've stalled long enough, my friend. Auburn went on the road last night. Auburn basketball did. Went to Oklahoma, went to Norman, and put on one of the worst performances we've seen in quite some time, Daryl. We described it as sad. We described it as uninterested. And Stephen Pearl said a lot of the same things in his postgame presser as well. Your initial thoughts on what Auburn basketball did or did not do last night against Oklahoma in a bad, bad loss?
One of the most frustrating things you can do in a team sports scenario is give back what you gained previously. So Auburn having that tremendous victory against Kentucky, the emotional shot in the arm it should have given them, winning at the buzzer the way they did, it is so frustrating that you completely wipe that out and give back what you've earned by losing that game last night. Now, look, it's weird how the eyeball test is that's a bad loss. Ironically, the NCAA Tournament Selection Committee will not consider it a bad loss. That is actually a quad one loss. So I know that's misleading because of the way Auburn played and because of where Oklahoma is in the SEC standings. But I said Saturday how important it was for Auburn to win. But not only that they won, it was how they won. They had a lead. They blew the lead. They came back, blew the lead again, then won the game late. I thought that all that stuff from a mental injection of positivity and emotion was good. I'll have to come right back out and say the exact same thing on the flip side. It's not just that Auburn lost last night. It's how they lost and how they looked losing. And, guys, at some point, it stops becoming a question mark or a frustration and a wonder why every time somebody plays Auburn, their three-point shooting percentage goes through the roof and they have career nights against Auburn. It's because of Auburn. It is what it is. It's not a coincidence anymore. It's seven games in a row. It's perimeter defense and what they're not doing. And I don't know the answer per se. I just know that it's an obvious problem. It's a flaw. It's a trend. And it's not a secret or a coincidence anymore that every time somebody plays Auburn, they have their best 3-point, whether it's an individual or a team, has a career night shooting the three. And I can tell you what I think could help. I'm not a coach, but I think this lineup needs a shakeup. I think this lineup needs to change, and I think they need to inject Elijah Freeman in the lineup. He's a little more active. He's a little more got long arms. He can get out on you, run at you. He's faster, more athletic. Play him more minutes than Sway at this point and let him try to clog up passing lanes, perimeter, to help with some perimeter defense, because right now it's absolutely horrible.
It's relieving hearing you say that, Daryl, because we had a very, very fun, maybe not fun, but a very needed conversation that said basically the exact same thing that you just said of, at some point you have to turn the page of, man, Shucky Darns, another guy had a career high against Auburn. I mean, you look at what Oklahoma did from three last night. When you go 13 of 19 and there's guys that go 2 of 2, 2 of 4, 6 of 8, and 3 of 4, that's not necessarily a fluke. That's just really poor defense. And Steven talked a lot about it. He used the word entitled for his team and apologized to the fans. Do you feel like we're at a point right now where the team understands where they're at and they understand that it is what it is? Or do you still think there's going to be some sort of fight with Alabama still on the horizon?
I think this team still has a tremendous opportunity to get into the NCAA tournament. And I think that all they have to do is win their next two games at home, that they should be favored and should win. If they take care of business and do what they're supposed to do, they don't have to go outside the box and upset somebody. I really believe if they win Saturday and win Tuesday, they're in. And now they may be a 10 seed, but they'll be in. And the reason they'll be in is because strength of schedule, net, and the five really, really good wins they have already on the resume. Now, what you do with that and how you represent Auburn once you get in the tournament is going to be interesting, because I just think there's such a defensive deficiency. See, to me, and this is going to sound like I'm making excuses, but I think when you play the level of defense with the emotion and the intensity and the energy you expend that Bruce Pearl and Stephen Pearl require of you, you cannot do that with a short bench. You can't. And I mean, we saw what happened to Overton when he was, you know, basically told, you go out and shut down Hubbard, in the second half. And he did a really, really good job, but he expended so much energy that he had nothing left on the offensive side. It's tough. Auburn was used to getting in your stuff and guarding you like that because they played 10 guys. And if you weren't defending like you're capable of, you came over and sat on the bench, and they ran somebody else out there that was. And that's what they don't have. They go seven or eight deep. And if you expend, and I think a lot of these players are taking plays off, they're saving energy, and because they know that they're going to have to play 40 minutes and they're going to need that offensively later. I'm not saying I agree with that. I'm saying that's reality. I'm not saying that other teams don't have injuries. I think that Auburn has had a combination of injuries and misevaluation. And that has led to playing seven guys or eight guys. You cannot guard in the SEC for 40 minutes the way you want to guard with seven dudes. And that's the difference between this team and years past.
And I'll say this, too. Again, Daryl Dappert of Locked On Auburn in the barn with us on the phone lines to start the second hour of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. Not only can you not play the defense necessary with just seven guys, you can't afford for somebody to take a night off, right, on either end of the floor, whether it be someone not scoring the way they're supposed to or not defending the way they're supposed to. This bench is so short now, and Auburn is using so few bodies. Everybody has to play dang near their best basketball for Auburn to win big games.
I also think there's a psychological aspect of it in the back of some of these kids' minds, and I don't care if people want to believe it or not or if they even want to admit it. When you're playing with the short bench, you have to think, I can't be as aggressive as I want to be on the defensive end. I cannot afford to get in foul trouble, right? I can't pick up three or four fouls and come off the floor because we don't have the bench. So that alters the way you guard. You're not going to go at it as hard, as physical, with as much energy. You may slack up a little bit. You may let a blow-by happen. You may be a little soft, a little lax on the defensive end because you're afraid to foul because you can get in foul trouble. All these things matter, and they all have a component. And I think another thing that's happening is because they're adjusting late and they're really trying to overcompensate extending on defense to shut down the perimeter and guard against the three, and they're not doing it effectively, it's leaving them on an island where they think, okay, let's grab the rebound and let's go for a run out and transition the other way. But it's leaving them susceptible to a lot of offensive rebounding because you got three guys extending on the shooter,
mm-hmm.
and if that shooter misses, now you've got two dudes down there to grab a rebound, and if the other team just crashes the boards with two, three, four guys, yeah, they may be giving up a breakout or a run out the other way, but there's a lot of putbacks. There's a lot of second-chance points that are happening. So it's a pick-your-poison scenario. If you pack it in because you don't want to be susceptible to second-chance points and offensive rebounds, then there's a chance you're leaving dudes open. If you run out at them and think, okay, well, if I get the rebound, we're out here already. We can go transition fast break the other way. You're leaving yourself open to the offensive rebounding and the second chance points. And there's got to be a combination thereof. I don't know. I don't devise game plans for, you know, defense for college basketball.
Right.
I know that whoever's doing it pregame, it's not effective. It does seem to be a little more effective coming out of halftime, which makes me think Stevens going in there with his iPad, seeing some things, has time to make adjustments at halftime that you can't make on the fly while the game's going on. I mean, for goodness sakes, he's a head coach. He can't break down the other team's offensive tendencies to create a defensive game plan while he's worrying about the officials and offensive substitutions and all kind of other things. You can do that at halftime in front of an iPad when you have 15, 20 minutes. And I think that's why you see sometimes Auburn playing a lot better defensively in the second half, i.e. Texas, Mississippi State, Kentucky. Remember, they were down 6 or 7, and Kentucky Saturday came out and played a lot better in the second half defensively. So,
right.
I don't know. I don't really answer. I do know this. They got to shake it up. They just got to shake it up.
Yeah, Auburn's got three games left in the regular season. Ole Miss this Saturday, LSU next Tuesday, and Alabama on the road to end the regular season. Daryl Dappert of Locked On Auburn in the barn with us on the phone lines. And look, I know basketball's got you running crazy. Have you had a chance to see the Tigers on the baseball diamond yet? And if so, what have you seen from Butch Thompson and the boys?
I have not.
Okay.
I think I may check. I think Saturday, so for those that want to have the EKG machine ready Saturday morning, I'll be running in the War Eagle Run Fest.
Oh, yeah.
And you've got, yeah. And I'll be in a disguise, like Forrest Gump and a beard and all that. I don't want people to see anything. Run. But then later that night, Auburn Ole Miss, and I'm trying to find a way to not go back and forth and back and forth. So I'll probably just stay and check out a little Auburn Nebraska baseball as well. And just make it a full Auburn Athletics Day, you know, which would be kind of cool over there. It's supposed to be nice weather. I think that this team absolutely woke up. Now, Cincinnati threw their ace against Auburn, which, okay, that's fine. You still shouldn't get shut out by a mid-majors pitcher. You shouldn't give them 8 runs. I think that game got their attention. And I think they went out to Arlington and really took care of business with that 3-game sweep over Kansas State, Florida State, Louisville, two of which were ranked. Tonight's another trap game, West Georgia, because college baseball is fluky. A mid-week game, they'll throw their ace. Auburn will not throw their ace, especially with Nebraska, who's ranked coming in. And so there will be, you know, there's a chance that even a team, a lower tier like that in baseball, it's so different. But I think, you know, Auburn is really back on track, and, you know, last week, after Auburn got beat by Mississippi State and Cincinnati beat Auburn in baseball, you're like, for the love of God, why does the athletic gods just hate us, right? I mean, and then it turned like that quick. Auburn beats Kentucky. The United States beats the Maple Syrup Boys. And, you know, and then the Auburn sweeps. And you're like, sports are great. I love this. This is why we love sports, right? It's a roller coaster.
Yeah.
It's a roller coaster. And it's why I should have chose to get into art and music instead.
Yeah, I don't think it's as disappointing as this, right?
I mean, you it is what it is. It's subjective. You look at that painting, you say it sucks, and you move on, right? You hear a song, and you say, that dude can't hit that note. He sucks, and you move on. Baseball, it's like in sports, you're like, it's ripping my heart out. There's never been a movie that I've gone and see that has been horrible that I've walked out of there and said, I don't even want to. I'm crushed. I'm depressed. I'm down. That has just ripped my soul out. Sports has. I've never looked at a Van Gogh and gone, that sucks. What did he do with color there? I don't like that color. And not wanting to go home and go to sleep for 15 hours straight because my team ripped my heart out, right?
Well, Daryl,
it's, you know.
Sorry, continue.
No, that was it. I kind of diverted there. But, yeah, that's what's so great about sports. Anybody that's listening to your show loves sports, so they all can relate. And you guys know it, too, because I feel like I know you really, really well. Even at my age, I let sports affect my mood, my behavior, and my temperament. And I know there are people out there that can watch it and don't. They can enjoy it, but if their team loses, it's like it doesn't affect me. There's too many more things in life that are important, and that is absolutely true. But when I was standing there Sunday morning getting ready for church, crying like an 8-year-old that got his finger pinched in a door because the United States hockey team went and got Johnny Gaudreau's kids and took a picture with his hockey jersey, I realized sports matters, and it's okay to have an emotional tie to it.
Well, Daryl, thankfully Auburn football has never broken your heart either, and I know that you had some spring game thoughts that we know, or maybe not spring game, but just spring football thoughts. Was it maybe the coaches throwing some jabs at Auburn, or is it more so just what you're excited about, what you're seeing right now on Auburn football before we let you out of here?
There's coaches throwing jabs because they're scared.
Ooh.
You don't throw jabs or say stuff like that unless you're worried.
Uh-oh.
And that's a good place to be right now. And I will say this. When Peyton Thorne came on campus and Jackson Arnold came on campus, as Auburn fans, we were never able to see them play until their actual first real game. It's going to be refreshing to be able to get a little sneak peek of Byron Brown in an A-Day game. Because you didn't have that with the previous two quarterbacks. Thorne got here in the summer, if you remember, and Jackson Arnold had a knee problem that he was going through, so he didn't get to play it, which it was a glorified scrimmage anyway. This format is going to be football, and you're going to be able to see what Byron Brown can do, and I think that's going to be really, really exciting.
Yeah, it's coming up very quickly. Basketball down the home stretch, baseball getting into the heart of it, and spring football around the corner. And we'll be talking all of that with our guy Daryl Dapperidge of Locked On Auburn and the Barn here on the show. My man, plug it all so we can get you out of here. I know we kept you a few minutes late. We always appreciate your time.
No problem. I would also encourage people to go check out the softball team because I'm really high on them too. And I think when conference play starts, it's exciting softball because they can swing the stick. And I think that's fun to watch. A lot of runs go across. So, yeah, better days are ahead. Brighter days are ahead. The sun's going to start shining. Birds are tweeting, and we'll get ready to watch some fun sports over the next 9 months. You can check us out Wednesdays and Fridays, Locked On Auburn. We have to get your podcast in on YouTube. And then we go live after every basketball game, Saturday, Neville Arena, Auburn undefeated, with Dap in the house, watching them live. So let's go.
Love it. Daryl, we appreciate you as always, my friend. We'll do it again next Wednesday, okay?
All right, I'll see you guys Saturday. Take care.
Yep, sounds good. Daryl Dapper, it's Locked On Auburn and the Barn, joins us every single Wednesday for Double D Wednesday at 3:05 here on ESPN 106.7. We'll take a break. We'll come back and, I don't know, we'll talk basketball or football or baseball or
art.
Yeah, we're talking favorite Van Gogh paintings right after this.
Hey, this is your resident Super Bowl champ, Chris Candy from Unsportsmanlike, and you're listening to On the Line with Jacob Goins on Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
All right, we're back here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Someone in our text box said Starry Night.
That's their favorite?
That's their favorite Van Gogh painting, Starry Night. Kind of basic, but a classic.
Yeah, imagine that being your favorite instead of being able to dive into the true, rich history of sunflowers. Thank you, AI Overview, on the... the unnamed.
I mean, I'm more fan of Auburn fans will enjoy this. I'm a big fan of the potato eaters.
Ooh,
yeah.
My Vincent favorite
Van
story,
Gogh,
though,
1885.
My favorite story is just, I mean, how he severed his earlobe. I mean, with a razor.
I heard that was fake. Like, I heard he had something with the ear, but I heard that him doing it himself was fake news.
I don't know.
Could be fake news.
I'll reach out.
That it was fake news, but
I'll reach out and ask. And
I actually have heard of the bedroom in Arles. I actually have seen that one, the one in 1888. My freshman year of college, I got to take an art appreciation class.
I took that, yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, I took music appreciation.
I think I would have appreciated that more than the art appreciation. But no, this person says Starry Night because they said they were having the same conversation with a friend about their love of sports, and they just decided that they wanted to follow a band, and they gave up on Auburn sports. So they decided to be fans of a new band and not let sports impact their daily mood like folks like us, Daryl Dapperich, and others do. So
Jacob follows Ella Langley.
I do. Yeah, I do. Very. Her, a lot of others as well. I was looking at the calendar the other day. June is quickly approaching, my friend. Cody Johnson, Al Langley, Ernest, Zach John King, Mackenzie Carpenter. Dude, and I totally forgot. I don't know if I shared this on the air. I've seen Mackenzie Carpenter in concert already.
Yeah,
she opened up for Sarah Evans. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I have her autograph because she was really good. She did like a meet and greet thing. She was good. She was really, really good. So someone did ask in the text box.
I have
box,
Van Gogh's Starry Night portrait. So it's actually my lock screen.
That'd be a pretty good one. Be refreshing. Ooh, I like this one. Almond Blossoms. Look at this one. I like that one. 1890. How about that? How many did he make? It says there's 45 on here. Good Lord. Oh, yeah. I've seen the self-portrait one. Him wearing the gray hat and the red beard. I've seen that one, too, of Van Gogh. Anyway, somebody asked about the basketball transfer portal for college basketball, asking, is it set up like football with just one portal window? And, yes, you have a 15-day window for basketball. It will open up April 7th. It will run through the 21st for men's basketball. So you've got a two-week period in there in mid-April for the college basketball transfer portal. So, Auburn, we assume we'll be active in that. But speaking of the portal, no way college coaches have found a new way to abuse the transfer portal. They have. We'll tell you what it is right after this.
We're halfway through hour number two. You've got 30 more minutes of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. He is Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. Phone lines are open if you want to be a part of the show today. Had some folks call in early today. We've had a couple of guests here, and look at that. Somebody calling in as we speak. So we're going to get them on. You can be on as well. 334-321-1390. That number again, 334-321-1390 to call into today's program, or you could shoot us a text, as many of you have as well, at 334-7 384-1067. Again, we talked to Jordan Hill of Dogs 247, Daryl Dapridge of Locked On Auburn in the Barn as well. It looks like we've got a phone call, and so we will get to it now. 334-321-1390. John in Wetumpka, you're on the line. What's going on?
Hey, just wanted to weigh in on this. Listen, y'all mentioned the fine arts of painting and music appreciation and stuff like that. Okay, I crammed 4 years of school into about 5.5.
Nice, yes.
So you know what kind of student I probably was?
You were just one that was suing the NCAA for more eligibility. That's all you were doing.
Yeah, I still have eligibility. Anyway, never used any of it. Wasn't good enough to use it, but I did want to mention that the only class I ever dropped at Auburn was music appreciation.
Isn't that a required course?
Well, it was a fine arts elective we had to have.
Okay.
And I told the lady, I said, "You're killing me." She was a doctoral student, first time she ever taught a class, and she wanted to prove to the world that she knew music.
Oh, boy.
And me and this other guy were buddies. We were ag majors, and we said, when they said, "Okay, who in here is a music major?" And everybody but he and I were the only two in there that were not majoring in music. I said, "Buddy, we in trouble."
Yeah.
I said, so she started talking about melodic lines and all this kind of stuff. And I said, "Look, lady," I said, "I got to drop the class." I said, "I've got to pass this other stuff."
Yeah.
I said, "I had got a soils class and a landscape design class and stuff like that." I said, I have to pass that."
That's awesome.
I said, "This is an elective," and I said, "You know, the closest thing to classical music I've had is Eddie Arnold." So, y'all probably don't even know who that is.
I know the name.
Nevertheless, yeah, so there was a guy that took her place for just a couple of weeks. She had to be out of the country or something. And it was an older guy, been teaching a long time. Man, it was fun when he was in there, but she was killing us. We were going to concerts and having to write reports and all this kind of stuff, and I did not have a good experience with that. Love the music, but she made the class a drudgery.
Yeah. That's how my art appreciation class was. I remember we had to go to like an art museum and go, and we had to do a whole report on it. And I mean, you definitely walk away with an appreciation for it. I still don't understand any of it, but I at least appreciated that it's not just, you know, painting on a canvas or whatever the case may be. I think we've all probably got stories like that, John.
Yeah, and I know why you have to have that. You need to be a well-rounded person that appreciates things. I get that. But I know that you can sometimes overdo it a little. She probably would be a different kind of teacher now, I would guess.
Probably.
You know, life has worn her down some, probably. She's an old lady, too, like I'm an old man.
There it is. There it is.
You get it? Yeah, but I will say this before I go. There's got to be a reason, guys, help me with this, why whoever we're opposing in basketball has a player that just goes off on us and has a career night against us.
Yeah.
It's not defense or what?
It's not coincidence, John. It's not luck either. And, John, we appreciate the call. It's good to hear from you, my friend down there in Wetumpka. That's exactly right. And, John, we've had a little bit of this conversation. Daryl chimed in on this conversation as well. This isn't just random.
It's not dumb luck.
Yeah. Auburn's defense is poor. It's poor defense.
Especially one-on-one and especially around the perimeter and even more so off the ball, which allows very easy open looks.
Back communication, not moving your feet, right? You're just throwing your arms in there. You're whacking at the ball. You're just not playing good defense on any possession in any way, shape, or form.
When Auburn is really good defensively, it's because they have guys that win one-on-one matchups to where the few times, well, that and you have rim protectors, so the few times that you do get blown by or the few times that you get caught up and there is a point guard or a shooting guard that's able to get downhill, the entire team doesn't have to immediately go into a scramble help defense. Everybody can still stay on their man because right now, anytime anybody drives, all 10 eyes find the basketball and they immediately begin to crash, which leads to very, very easy and open looks. Because again, we talk about it, a paint touch is the best opportunity for a three because it opens up the percentages just that much more. When Auburn's actually able to play on your man off the ball and not over help, that is when Auburn is fantastic defensively. You don't have that right now. You don't have the depth for that right now. You definitely don't have the want to or the drive to do that either.
Yeah, Spectre chimed in on what Daryl was saying a little bit earlier in our on-the-line text box, which is open, 334-784-1067. He says, do you hear what Daryl is saying? Says, Pearl can't do it all and make the adjustments on the fly. He can't do it all. Spectre says, well, that's why he's got coaches on the bench to try and help him out, which is what Daryl was talking about as well. The difference in the first half versus the second half of this Auburn team defensively, it's like Stevens having to go in there, grab the clipboard, and say, here's what we're going to do. Go do it.
Yeah, and by no means am I saying this from the standpoint of job offerings or anything like that, because that will be what comes to mind when I make the comparison. But you look at what DJ Durkin did as a head coach versus a defensive coordinator. When DJ had to put on the head coaching hats in the couple of games without Coach Hugh Freeze, the defense struggled a lot more because it wasn't him being able to focus on defense. He had to focus on every single thing that happened during the contest. That is what Stephen Pearl is having to deal with right now. And the few changes that he makes, he doesn't get the buy-in for the players, at least not for 20 minutes, or at least not for 40 when you're talking about it before the game, 20 minutes when you're talking about it at halftime. It makes it a lot more frustrating. I can only imagine the frustration that he has, because I'd be very, very surprised if you interviewed Steven and it got to the point of where it felt like he was the guy that was truly not putting the guys in the right position defensively to get stops. Because right now it's just one-on-one matchups on the ball where you just can't get it done.
Yeah, so very frustrating with what happened last night in Norman. Again, we've talked a lot about that today. Do want to have this conversation, though, because we teased it going to our bottom of the hour break. And if you want to chime in on the basketball stuff, please, again, give us a call, 334-321-1390. Saw this tweet from Brandon Marcello earlier today. Brandon Marcello, he's been on the show several times. He senior writer for CBS Sports for college football. The NCAA FBS Oversight Committee has recommended that the Division I cabinet adopt an emergency legislation that penalizes schools who get transfers without players entering the portal. What that big word soup means is an emergency rule is trying to be put in place right now in college football. For a reason, I can't even believe that this is an issue, that this is a problem, that this loophole was found, and not just found, Christian Griffin, abused to the point where the Oversight Committee and the NCAA are having to come out and say, hey, this needs to be a rule to put an end to this. Here's what's happening. The transfer portal window in college football is what? Closed. It's not open. It's done.
So thankfully, we don't have to worry about it anymore, right?
You would think, right? You would think. But we've now got schools who are adding players to its roster, not through the transfer portal, but because little Johnny decided, I don't want to go to school at Syracuse anymore. I want to be a student at Ohio State or at Missouri or at Washington or whatever the case may be. They're not entering the transfer portal as a college football player. They're dropping out of Syracuse, and they're enrolling at Missouri whatever.
And then just, you know what? I think I do want to keep playing football if given the opportunity.
Oh, you're saying there's an opening for a receiver on the Missouri football team?
You're saying, wait. You're saying that I was a five-star receiver that just happened to not like my music appreciation class at this school. So I'm going to drop out. Or, you know what, during this winter semester, I just really think that I have another major that I want to pursue, because it is all about the student athlete, because that word still comes first for some reason. So because of that, I will transfer to X school. But it's because of it's because of my major. It's because I want to still get an education. I still want to understand how life really works.
I
want to
take art appreciation at Missouri, damn yeah. it.
The music teacher here did not fulfill my request. However, let me go take 1400 music appreciation and understand, because my goodness, the music in Nashville, Tennessee has been where my heart has been this entire time.
Hey, Broadway's a fun time, man.
Wait, Vanderbilt, I'm that five-star receiver. You're lacking a five-star receiver, aren't you? I mean, I guess if you need me to play football, I guess I'll give it another opportunity. I was trying to retire, Coach. I really was. I was going to focus on the rest of my life. Huh? Oh, 2.2? Let me call Mom. Let me see what happens. I think I can work something out.
So
I think my cleats will go from this school to this school.
The reason this is being recommended for this rule to be put in place, again, it's to penalize schools who could get transfer players without them actually entering the transfer portal. The concern is what Brandon Marcello goes on to say. He says, many coaches are concerned that rivals will entice players to leave their teams after the spring and try to enroll elsewhere despite the absence of a spring transfer portal window. Think about that for a moment. That's the concern. Enough coaches have raised concerns to the Oversight Committee and Division I FBS and the NCAA. Enough coaches have brought this forward to where they're trying to put an emergency rule in right now, because the spring starts in a month, for kids to go through spring practice, say, I'm not going to play here, or I don't want to be here, or coach yelled at me, I don't want to be here. So they're going to drop out of school and enroll somewhere else, but they never entered the portal because the spring transfer portal window doesn't exist anymore.
Which goes to show you, again, if enough coaches are concerned about it, this is not just the NCAA or Marcello coming out and saying, you know what, we probably should try and prevent this in case it happens.
Yeah, let's get out in front of this. No, no. These conversations have already been had. That's where this is coming from.
This is not a college football transfer portal. This is an academic transfer portal.
That's such a joke.
That just happens to entice continuing to play collegiate football.
Who comes up with this? Who are these people that are, I mean, they're clearly much smarter than somebody like me.
They're sitting there with four dual monitor computers and they figure it out, and you can sit there, they sit there and, holy cow, look what I just did. Coach, you won't believe it.
Yeah, here's our whiteboard. Here's what we're thinking. What do you think?
What's the show with the strings are attached to 100 different...
crime show, yeah. Yeah, they're linked here, here, and here, right? We last saw them here. Like, who comes up with that idea? Who was it that said, I found a loophole? And that's exactly what this is. It's a loophole to get a player on a current college football roster. Since the portal's already closed, coaches are trying to entice them, convince them, sway them, pay them to leave their current school and enroll somewhere else and avoid the transfer portal altogether. I can't believe it's taken this long for it to happen.
I was kind of thinking the same thing. I'm surprised. But again,
publicly,
it's because the spring transfer portal was allowed to where
right.
It makes things a little bit more simple. Simple with quotation marks. But yeah, the fact that, A, you're just now figuring this out or just now publicly finding out about it. But I mean, this comes now where, if it's already being talked about now, imagine what the conversations could be after these spring games are televised, after you see all of the talent that's on the field. That's when it gets even more amped up if this is not adopted with, what's the word he uses? He recommended them to adopt it.
Yeah, well, here's what the penalties would include on this rule if it takes place. A 6-game suspension of a coach, right? If this rule is put in place and it turns out that a school goes through with it anyway, or they found out that they did this and the rule goes in place, a head coach would have a 6-game suspension, 20% reduction in their football budget, and a reduction of roster spots for that current team.
It's crazy that they just won't log some of their money.
Yeah, they're supposed to meet in April. And this is supposed to be on the docket. They're meeting about several things, but this is supposed to be on the bill or on the docket. And how perfect is that? That they're going to meet in April, right around spring games for all the major college football programs.
Maybe we do officially owe an apology to Charles Bediako for just really wanting to continue playing school.
Playing school.
To where now all of these other kids are wanting to continue playing school elsewhere as well.
This is such a wild thought to me, man. That somebody...
Which we didn't even talk about that today. The fact that there was another drastic step.
There was another appeal. He lost again, and then he did it again.
And then put an emergency appeal to the Alabama Supreme Court.
At what point do you just get embarrassed?
Fries in the bag, bro.
At what point do you just give in? Give up, bro. Find a job. It sucks, but, I mean, welcome to adulthood, buddy. It's how the world works. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll wrap up the Wednesday edition of the show. We'll talk Auburn baseball. They got West Georgia coming in tonight. We'll wrap up the show with that next.
This is Evan Cohen from Unsportsmanlike, and you're listening to On the Line with Jacob Goins on Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin, online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Winding down here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Been a great show today. We've talked a lot of different things. Of course, Auburn losing to Oklahoma this weekend, or yesterday rather, last night in Norman. We talked about that. Talked to Jordan Hill of Dogs 247. Also, we talked to Daryl Dapperch of Locked On Auburn in the barn, and then just talked about a new rule that's trying to be put in place for college football because coaches found a loophole for the transfer portal. So now we got to try and fix it. So all of that on today's show. If you missed any of it, you can go back and listen to the podcast of today's show at ESPNAU.com.
Sitting here looking at some bracketology, not the official one, but just the one that Joe Lunardi tweets out every couple of days, usually does it Wednesdays before the games tonight. Looking at Auburn's spot right now, they dropped, but not enough to drop a seed line. Auburn currently is the last team with a bye in the NCAA tournament. So they, as of now, don't play a play-in game. They're still a 10 seed, but the very last team that has a bye right now. And what's funny about the last four byes, we talk about the SEC having 11 teams in the tournament right now. All four last four byes are SEC teams.
Jeez.
Texas A&M, Missouri, Texas, and Auburn. So imagine what these last couple of games could look like to where all of a sudden the SEC goes from 11 to like 7. Because if all four teams just decide to play the way that Auburn did last night,
that's more likely than all those teams getting in.
That's wild.
I think.
The first couple of teams out, Ohio State, Cal, USC, San Diego State. The last four in right now, Santa Clara, TCU, Indiana, following whatever they put on the floor last night, and then New Mexico. So
gross.
Still a lot of room to be decided, man. With you feel like the top two and three seeds are beginning to get finalized, right? I mean, I don't think Purdue is going to be a one seed, but you feel like they've locked down a two. You feel like Houston is kind of in that boat. Same with Illinois. Otherwise, I mean, you feel like Kansas, Florida are kind of locked down the three seeds, and there's not as much movement on that side of things, but my goodness, the back half is still going to be absolute chaos, especially, again, in the SEC, to where imagine if this is the year where Thursday and Friday in the SEC tournament actually mean something.
Yeah, I guess. But what confidence do we have, or evidence do we have to be confident in that?
None, but that's why there's no confidence, that's why it's scary, because you just absolutely don't know anything.
God, Auburn could be that team we talked about yesterday that's locked in as one of those 10 seeds, yeah, and just says, I'm not playing in Nashville. We'll take a 10 seed. You're not going to improve us, but we're not going to take the risk of you dropping us, so we're good. We're not going to play on Thursday in the SEC tournament. No thanks.
I mean, imagine if one of these teams, I don't know exactly what the format is, imagine if they play each other in the first round or the second rounds. Like, that's their the first or second game. That's Texas A&M in Texas.
To where you don't get rewarded for winning, but you could get punished for losing.
Wild.
Both teams walk out, shake hands, and walk away.
Yeah.
I would. Why not?
It's crazy stuff.
Crazy stuff. Well, all right, we got to go. We're out of time. We are back tomorrow. Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network, Chris Gordy of Locked On SEC, and a whole lot more fun. We're back 2-4 right here on ESPN 106. Huh?
Talking Leonardo da Vinci tomorrow.
Gosh, turn his microphone off. We got to go. We're back tomorrow. Until then, he's Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. We'll talk to you later.